I'm Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
And this
is the Eshcast.
This is Electric Sisterhood, podcast episode number 522.
You're gonna lose a hand.
Guaranteed. This is Electric Sisterhood, home of the best.
The fucking best.
Girl gaming, tech gadget, and anime podcast. I am Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
Welcome to a brand new episode of our weekly podcast, Panda.
Hi.
How you doing?
Good.
I've had coffee.
Oh God, I can tell.
I've had a lot of coffee, and I'm still drinking coffee, and it's not Irish coffee, which is a damn shame. Just saying.
Duly noted.
Always better when there's liquor involved, but only if you're 21.
I mean,
I said only if you're 21.
If you're 21
or whatever, or whatever your legal drinking age is, wherever you are.
Yeah.
Hashtag the more you know. All right. So while my cup of coffee here is virgin, this podcast is not, because we are going to be talking a lot about a particular game. And guys, I'm going to let you know right now. You're going to be really surprised because Pan and I are both talking about the same thing today.
Same fucking thing.
Okay. And that happens often on this podcast. But when I tell you what we're talking about this week, you're going to be like,
you'll definitely be like, what?
Really?
Like, I'm very surprised.
Really? Like, what?
A2 Ninja, A2.
Right? So I know last week that I said I was going to be talking about Rise and Shine because I didn't get a chance to play it last week. And I was going to make an effort this week to play it. An effort was made and I failed. I did not play Rise
Sometimes
and Shine this week.
Sometimes failure happens.
It happens quite a lot. Look, like life got in the way. I had a project due for school that I really needed to focus on because I went back to school.
I'll listen to you talking like a student.
And I had to be an adult and not play the video games and get my project done and do my discussion thing. So I wasn't able to play the game. But then you're like, okay, well then how are you guys talking about the same thing? Well, while I was, you know, working and reading and things like that, I had to have something on in the background. And I did. And the thing that I had on in the background was YouTube. In particular, I was watching some of my more favorite YouTubers play the game that we're going to talk about for the next hour, Resident Evil 7 Biohazard.
Biohazard. Which is funny because the game itself is called Biohazard in Japan. So it's like Biohazard 7, Biohazard.
Yeah. Do they include the second Biohazard? Or is it Biohazard 7?
I don't know. Because in Japan, the game is called Biohazard.
I know, like, so I think it's just Biohazard 7. I don't think it's subtitled Biohazard again.
I think it would be very Japanese of them to do that and then add a weird multiple paragraph afterwards in the title.
Yep. But anyway, so we are talking about Resident Evil 7. Now, we have kind of talked about Resident Evil 7 a few times since it was, you know, revealed at E3, and we had had the discussion about, you know, whether or not it was really going to be a return to true survival horror roots or not.
Or even just if we were going to go back to Resident Evil basics.
Right.
More or less.
And we also had a little bit of discussion about, you know, what does the Resident Evil world, you know, look like without certain people involved in the project? You know, just a couple of things. And there were a lot of concerns, you know, because Capcom really hasn't had a great run with the franchise with the last few outings.
I think a lot of people praise for innovation.
Four and was then how long ago?
Four kind of changed the spectrum.
I know, but I'm saying the last three Resident Evil games, what do you have positive to say about them? I'll wait.
All right, so 4-1, I thought it was a great jump in terms of graphics and story. They went back to basics in terms of the character, where, you know, you have pretty much just a human who, yes, has some skill sets.
Isn't 4 outside of the last 3? I said the last 3, Panda.
No, 7, 6, 5. Oh, 5. Wait, are we counting 7?
Yes.
Because if we're not, then it'd be 6, 5, 4.
No, we're counting 7.
Counting 7? Okay. All right. Well, 5 had a black lady in it. She was my shit. We could go back into our shows, and you'll hear how many times.
Yeah,
like,
Sheva,
I'm like
was
pro
shit.
Sheva. I mean, it was nice African. Yeah, and then 6 was shit, and then 7 is amazing. Though it has less black people, but that's okay.
That's okay. Not everything, you know.
Not everything is enhanced with blackness. I get it.
No, it's not about enhancements. I'm just saying.
So, but yes. So, okay. If we're including 7, then the last positive thing I can bring up about the last 3, outside of 7 being amazing, is that 5 had a black woman in it.
Well,
and I finally felt like I could be identified.
And then, again, what about Raccoon City, Revelation? After 5.
Raccoon City is not canon, for one, depending on who you talk to. Not canon to me. And it was also shit. But it was created. It's kind of like those artists who I think are in New York who like find shit nuggets and then do something cool with them. So you're like, it might be shit, but like it's also kind of art. It's like a little shit turd with like sprinkles on it. So you're like, oh, that shit has sprinkles on it.
What about Revelations 2?
Revelations and Revelations 2.
Right. Those also.
They're good.
So if you count
Standalones and they're like a sub thing that's going on during the main plot.
All right, so we're just counting canon. All right, so if we're just counting canon numbered games, then yes, including 7, we're talking 7, 6, and 5.
Yeah, then yes, 5 had a black woman in it. That was pretty cool. So yes,
and
that
was shit.
6. There were moments where you're like, that's less
six
shitty.
6 was shit in digital form.
Mm-hmm. Okay. With no sprinkles.
No sprinkle
is shit.
No rainbow sprinkles.
But anyway,
nothing. All right, so let's get
let's not talk
shit.
About the shit. Let's talk about the shit.
But you gotta talk about the shit to appreciate the
non-shit.
Right.
Right.
Okay. So when we say, you know, that 6 was shit, and the best thing about 5 was I had a black chick. Let's to give that some context in the Resident Evil world. Okay, I am not a huge Resident Evil player.
I
enjoy watching other people play them. I did get 5 because I was told that I was going to be escorted through it. And then that didn't happen, so I traded it in. Because I, as you guys, if you've listened to the podcast before, I don't enjoy jump scares. I enjoy a good thriller. I enjoy a psychological thriller. I enjoy the environment being used against me to create a sense of heightened awareness, but I don't enjoy jump scare. And it's just something I don't enjoy across many mediums. I don't, you know, go to horror movies for that. You know, I have nothing against gore. I have no problems with gore. It's really just the jump scares that adversely affect me, and they take my suspense away. They take my enjoyment away, and they remove me from the situation. Whenever I get a jump scare, it completely takes me back to my reality, and it takes me too long to get back into the thing that I was doing. So I personally just don't enjoy them, but I do enjoy watching other people play those kinds of games that I know have that mechanic and uses it, because I can watch their reaction and their journey, and then I can stay focused in the thing because I am focused on them and their reaction and their experience, and not necessarily the jump scare that's coming to me on screen, if that makes sense. So,
I get it.
I've watched a lot of people play horror games and survival games that I have interest in, that I know that I just am not going to play, like Until Dawn and Silent Hill and Resident Evil, because they're stories that I do want to experience, especially because many of their characters, because the franchises have run for so long, in a good way, not a bad way, that they're, you know, common lexicon among the community, and I don't want to be left out of those conversations and understand those inside jokes and, you know, those kinds of things. So I watch quite a few people play those games. And when Resident Evil 7 was announced, you know, and we saw the initial trailer, the beta,
mm-hmm.
and even watching kitchen. People play through the exactly kitchen
people it, people getting tidbits and exposure to kitchen, not knowing what kitchen was going to be. And then seeing Kitchen revealed in the Resident Evil. Yeah.
You know, and it was very interesting. So the demo that we saw was, when it was introduced, basically took us to what seemed to be some kind of swamp area. We didn't know exactly where it was, but it, you know, very much gave me the feel of like a bayou down in like New Orleans or something. And
Louisiana.
And we had this crew, because it was obvious that it was an on-air talent and, like, his crew going into this dilapidated house. And so immediately I was like, oh, that's supposed to be, like, you know, some kind of, like, Ghost Hunters or something like that type show.
Sewer Gators.
Yeah, that's what the show is called. Still don't understand what that is, but whatever. And
neither,
so
I don't get it either.
The crew was going into this home to investigate this, you know, decades old myth about this family. And we're not exactly sure what the details are, but something happened and the family like disappeared. And so they're going through the house and, you know, again, it's all dilapidated, you know, floorboards are broken. There's pots and pans with really, really nasty, old, way, way, way decomposing food and bugs. And, you know, you get these glimpses into the life of the people who were, you know, at some point in time in this
home. If you can call that life. If you can call that life.
We'll get there. But I'm talking about, you know, the exposure, the kitchen demo. You think that there was a life there. Because you see that there are some photos in different rooms of the family. And they look like, you know, just a regular family. Mom, Pa, Baker smiling in a photo together and a photo of their son.
Lucas.
Lucas. And you know, it everything seems okay. But the house definitely feels, you know, not lived in, dark, abandoned. And you know, everybody is in the cruise trying to figure out how and why. And at some point in time, one of the crew members...
Because there's the host of the show who's like a part-time, like a sub anchor who's just looking for his big break. You have his producer and you have the cameraman whose name is Clancy.
And it's your perspective of the cameraman as you go through the beta. And it was really interesting to me because, you know, the visual looked fantastic. You know, it did feel like you were watching a VHS of this video that Clancy took. And as you start going through the house and the producer disappears, the reaction...
I mean, and he disappears very quickly. Like, I don't think anyone's actually caught exactly when you don't see him anymore.
Yep, it's just like there's a moment where he's with you. And at least in the beta, there's a moment where the cameraman turns because I think the host guy says, like, did you catch that? And so your natural reaction is to turn to see that you missed something. And in that moment, the producer disappears. And so the two of you then are spending time trying to get through the house and figure out where he went. You find this.
So you guys can get the heck out.
Yeah. You find this switch in the fireplace. That
I'd like to know what made him think to look in the fireplace.
I want to stop right there and be like, okay, at that point, I'm beyond...
I would get the fuck out.
Exactly.
Bye.
I'm a horrible person because I'm going, if you spend enough time to create a freaking secret entrance to an area of your home, like you hired builders to build that, you've got a torture dungeon someplace. I'm sorry, dude. I'm out of there and I will call police and let them know that you are in there and let like... professionals with weapons figure that shit out. I'm out. But
Bye.
No. But no. the Great White Hope continues on. I was like, oh, let's go down in this hole. I'm like, no, let's not go into the hidey hole.
And not even him first. He's like, you first, because I need a hero shot of me. It's like, fuck you.
Exactly. So I watched, you know, this demo, and you get down into the hole, and you see your producer, and he's staring at a wall. Now, it's never good when someone is just down in the dark, ain't got no lights on, ain't had no lights on, because the only light is the light from your camera.
Yeah. Okay?
It's just facing a wall. Nothing good is going to come of that. But you go over and grab his shoulder and be like, hey, man, what's up? And he's super dead. He's just been posted on a pole in the corner and flops down on you with blood coming out of his eyes and Lord knows coming out of his mouth. And then some dude comes walking up to you because you see these manly looking legs, and then you get popped in the head and the video goes dark, and that's the end of the beta, and it's also the end of the trailer. And
welcome to the family, son.
Exactly. And right at that moment, I was very interested in the game because everything that we went through in that was very much up my alley. It was all thriller. It was using the environment against me. There wasn't even a jump scare. Like, when you pull the guy back off the pole, it's not like, ah, crud in your face. It's just, holy hell, that dude is dead, and now he's on my body. Like, it was a natural reaction to things.
Reaction. And so I
started
agree.
To think, you know, hey, if the game is like this, I could play that. And not only could I play that, I would want to play that, because I was hooked at that point of, I want to know what is going on, what happened, whose legs were those, why was the guy on the pole, why was he basically...
What are those?
Exactly. I was like, he was kind of on that pole in a weird way, like he was being fed something. What was he being fed? What was going to happen to him? The game at that point didn't...
Well, I mean, he was dead, so he wasn't eating nothing.
I have a theory. So anyway, so as we get into the game, I'll talk about it. But at that point, I was like, wow, he was hosted up on that pole like that. Like, that was just weird. And, like, I want to know whose legs those were. And I couldn't quite make out what the guy said the first time. So, what did he say? Why were they in the house? How did we get this tape? Who is watching this tape? Like, I had so many questions. And I think that that's a really good mark of a good demo and a good trailer and a good game. When you have more questions than answers with what you've been presented visually, you have my attention. And so, I was markedly interested in the game, because I thought that you know, like, this is the first time in a long time that it felt like Capcom really was marketing an experience.
And they are. They absolutely are in this game.
Versus what they did in, you know, even 4, the way that they approached 4, 5, and 6. So I've been watching the game. And then when the beta came out, I really went back and forth on whether or not to get the beta. Especially because when they announced the beta, you know, the team said, hey, we're giving you this experience, which is a little bit beyond what we did in the demo, you know, the announcement piece that we did for E3. They were like, but they said at that time, like, this experience has nothing to do with the game. So just know that, like, this is for you to get immersed in the world, but you're probably not going to see it. And it was Kitchen, which was the more deeper exploration of the house before you get to the dead producer. And it was really interesting because, you know, you were going through it and you weren't actually the crew going through Kitchen. You were now the protagonist of the story, Ethan.
Ethan Winters.
Following and going into the house much later after this crew did. And
which the game in current time is happening actually in the future of 2017. So it actually, in our timeline, has not happened in reality.
Yeah, and there's a lot of time play involved. And so Ethan is looking for his wife, Mia, and comes and through different things that are sent to him. And we don't know in the beta the things that are sent to him. But we know that the clues have led him to this house in
Silent Hill. No, yeah. A lot of similarities in that, though.
Was it Dulvey, I think is the name?
Dulvey, Louisiana.
And so he comes down to the house and is going through and goes to the kitchen the same way that, you know, the team did, and everything is, you know, still very much dilapidated and decaying and nasty, gross. And he comes across this VHS tape, which we realize, if you'd been paying attention to everything about the game, was the trailer that Capcom put out for the game at E3, which is the tape of Clancy, the cameraman, going through the house with the crew. And so it's Ethan watching the tape and learning where the switch is in the fireplace because of it. And so you learn that, oh, hey, these VHS tapes are actually going to give you clues to...
They're a mechanic in the game.
Right.
The things that you are presented with in the game are things you are going to use. Everything has a strong intended purpose, which if you played Beginning Hour, which is the demo, like, people were like live streaming, going through the whole thing, trying to theorize everything that they came across in the demo. Granted, even though they were warned that this was just the experience of how you were going to play the game, but not necessarily the story in the game, which actually isn't exactly true. But
correct.
At the end of Beginning Hour, there was a piece that if you did a lot of searching, you found it, and it was a dummy finger. And, like, people were like, there's no mannequins with hands. Like, they're like, this has no, here it is. Here's this thing. And how does this play into everything? And people were going apeshit for it. Like, is this going to play into the real game? Like, what is this about? Like, I can't believe Capcom would do this. I believe it. And it was genius.
Believe it.
Genius.
But
I won't go into...
Well, we're going to go into it. And I'm not going to spoil it because I haven't watched anybody get all the way through the game. I have been watching...
I'm pretty through in my walkthrough, so I might end up revealing something that you...
You may, but I am not. Because I don't want to skip through. I am enjoying experiencing the game through... the people that I'm experiencing the game through. So right now I am watching Markiplier, Jacksepticeye, and Game Grumps play through the game. And what's interesting about all of it is that they play at different paces. And Mark and Jack are playing the game. One is playing on PC, the other one is playing on console. And the Game Grumps are actually right now playing it through PSVR. So they're all...
Oh, so they're all these different experiences.
They're all different experiences, which I really like. And they're all different personalities. You know, the Game Grumps team are very much like me. They don't like jump scares. And so their commentary the entire time is very spooky. And they're debating just how far along in the game they're going to be able to get before they're like, nope, fuck this, and turn the VR thing off and just play it vanilla.
Oh. And did you see the Game Grumps trying to play PT?
Yes. Yes. Yes, I did. That's pretty much like, that would be me. I would be under a blanket and be like, no, don't make me do it. I have not watched anyone be able to get all the way through PT. I can't do it. It just fucks with me too much. And that's why I'm like, oh, I am really going to have to, like, go over your house on days where it's really light on the weekend and watch you play Dungeons & Dragons. Because I'm not going to be able to do this. I'm not going to be able to do this. But anyway, so for me, it's very interesting because they all play at different paces. Right now, Mark's a little bit further along than Jack. And so I watch Mark, and then I go and I watch Jack get to where Mark was, basically, in his play, and just kind of compare, like, how things are different for them as far as what details they pick up on differently, you know, because Mark is very much narrating the whole experience and talking about, you know, the environments and what's going on in the game, and then, you know, having his reactions when things, you know, go a little wonky, because I love his reactions because they are so exaggerated. Like, Mark reacts physically the way internally I react, which is cool. And then Jack very much is just trying to find the things to move forward. And when things pop up that are weird or scary or frank, like, he has his normal loud Jack reaction. And because that's just his regular tone, it allows me to stay, like, on key and regular so I don't get super freaked out about it. And then the Game Grumps are just in VR, so everything is, like, straight up in the camera face, and they actually have a camera on themselves, so you can see their physical reactions, while they're also playing the game in VR. So they're all very different experiences of the same game in the same time. And the Game Grumps guys are the furthest back along. So by the time I get to the VR thing, I've already experienced and seen all the things that are going to happen. So even though it is in VR and is like straight up on the screen, it is not as scary to me because I know what's coming.
Okay.
Because I've already now seen it twice. From the Markiplier angle and the Jack angle, by the time it gets to the VR angle, and it's those guys, I'm like, all right,
you're desensitized. I'm
like, okay,
now.
So you're about to get it because that body's gonna pop up in the water, and you're gonna be like, oh, it's gonna be in your face and have maggots and whatever. Like, and I know it because I've already experienced it now twice. You know, so I'm desensitized to it, which is great because I can then enjoy it more. But to your point, Capcom lied because Kitchen is not an experience that is separate from the game. It is in the game. It is part of the game. You go through Kitchen and they don't change anything with the exception of...
There's some dialogue change.
There's some dialogue change.
And one no visual instance. And there's no finger.
And wait, what visual instance?
So in... when they're walking...
Yeah.
When Clancy is walking through from when you walk through the kitchen and then there's a stairwell going up to the base, to the attic.
Yeah.
And the guy is like calling out to the guy. He's calling out to the producer.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, let's like, so in beginning hour, he's just like, keep your spot on me. All right. And you just follow him. But in the actual game, he goes, let's fucking find Dave, because I think his name is Dave.
Okay.
The producer. He's like, yep. And then let's just fucking go. Like, that's what he says. And he doesn't say it in beginning hour. They don't, he never has a conversation or a dialogue instance with Clancy. Because at the beginning of beginning hour, he's like, this guy looks like a newbie. I don't want to fucking work with him. Yep. And Dave's all like, it's fine, dude. It's fine. But in the instance here in the game, because Dave is now all of a sudden gone missing, the front man guy is like, you stay with me, Clancy, because you're like one of the fucking best cameramen. So like, he's scared. So he's sucking up to the cameraman because he thinks
I didn't even pick up on that, but you're right.
It's the slightest nuance. Slight.
Okay.
But it is slightly different if you played it enough or watched it enough to know that. Like, but it was a nice touch. I'm like, look at that. Trying to make me think things are different, but they're not. I'm not dumb. But yes, and there is no dummy finger in the drawer.
Yeah.
At this point.
All right. So now it's time to talk about the story. Because why the fuck is he eating for Mia? Why is he down in Louisiana? What the hell's going on? Why is he missing his wife? I've been talking a lot. So I'm going to let you talk about the story and take it from here. And I'm just going to jump in every once in a while with my jump scares of,
All right. Great. Mia Winters is doing a job. And you still at the point that I'm in my game, I do not know what her job exactly was. But she, like, sends videos, like, phone videos to Ethan every once in a while. Or at least she did. And she sends a video
about
right
a babysitting job and how she can't wait to
be
done.
Oh, man. I can't wait for it to be done because I'm almost home to you. Kissy face. Ha. And then he jumps out of that. And then he gets another one with a very distressed Mia in it. And it's like, Ethan, if you're seeing this, and it cuts out, and then you see the email that Ethan gets from Mia, and it has literally a location, Delvey, Louisiana, Baker Farm, come get me. And then it cuts to him in a car talking to a bro, whose bro name I don't remember, and his friend's like, she's been missing for 3 years. Why now? Like, why are you even going? Like, his friend is so not about him leaving everything to go get his wife.
He's totally,
he's like,
bro before ho. And I'm like, that was his wife, not like a side piece. That was his wife.
You know, and he's like, what if it's like not a thing? He's like, it might be a joke, but like, you know, what a good husband Ethan is. Cause like, he could have been like, fuck that shit and like lived probably a decent life considering. But anyway, he hops into a car and you see him driving up to the house. And it's the house from the kitchen demo, the beginning hour demo. And he walks in very much like they do in the movie, in the videotape. And it is just as disgusting, just as repulsive.
He has to go through the forest with the...
Yeah. So he's like walking through...
thing? I don't even know what that
horse.
Is.
Horse legs. And like, it gets kind of weird because, yes, there's like this weird pinwheel looking thing with horse legs and like saw blades, and he has to crawl under it. And then he slowly gets up to the gate to the, you know, it's really funny for a bigger farm.
Wait, and this, so I like, I have paid attention because I've seen this so many times now. I've paid attention. There's a sign. So where the horse leg arc is. So like if you've ever seen like the Arc Android cover for Janelle Monáe's album, like all the spiky things that are around her, it's a bunch of horse legs kind of arranged like that. But there's a sign to the right that's sort of written in blood that says, accept her gift.
Yes.
And you have to duck underneath this horse leg thing with buzzsaw saws hanging off it, mobile.
Now, they're not spinning, but they're there.
But they're there. And, like, I was so terrified because when you look around at the ropes that are connecting them, I'm like, you're going to, like, put your hand on this thing to get underneath it, and, like, they're going to fall.
It was going to come down and, like...
Like, that's what I was thinking.
No.
But it doesn't
happen. Not too early.
But that's how you enter the environment. So that's how you know, like, you're going into a fucking experience.
Yeah. So as he's walking up, you know, because this is when you get to... You see the house. And Ethan is just walking through the house, and he's like, what the fuck? Like, and it's funny, because he's, like, having conversations about himself, about this whole Mia thing, like, what the fuck, Mia? Like, what? Like, he is in such disbelief that in this decrepit house, she, you know, I think at this point he thinks it's kind of a joke. Things are happening, and, like, he's rummaging through this house. Like, talk about, like, feeling confident walking around this, like, abandoned house, because, like, I wouldn't do it even in the middle of the day.
First of all, the horse leg thing, that's when I would have turned around and been like, bitch, even if you are here, again, I'm going to go get the authorities.
I'm gonna pull up to the horse legs and be like, beep, beep, and text, I'm outside. Like, I would not go up to this stoop.
Okay? Like, not happening. This is when you call a swan and be like, hey, I found this abnormally thing arranged in this swamp area. I feel like we should get, like, a lot of people with some high-powered rifles and investigate what the fuck is going on. I'll be right here by the road waiting for y'all.
But needless to say, he eventually ventures into the room with the TV in it. Like, you can tinker around and touch everything, but you can't at this point pull the cord because he has to find the tape. The tape is also not in the same place that it was in beginning hour. Locations of things have moved. I think the first thing you get is the tape, and then you eventually get the cutters. But you get the cutters first in the actual game. So then you can go back to there's a cabinet that has chains on it that you can cut, and that's where you find the tape. And then you go there, you watch the tape, and you see Dave, Front Guy, and Clancy go through this house, and you find out about the secret pulley in the fireplace, which you then use. And then you go into that little secret passageway, and there's that lovely hole, that very, very nice hole. The fuse is not there, though, so you have not ventured up into the second floor of this house yet. But you go down the hole, because you have to. Not that you want to, but you have to.
Go down the hole!
You have to go down the hole. And, I mean, long story short on that, you go through some water, there's some dead bodies in it. Ethan is mildly grossed out, but not nearly as reactory as I thought he would be to see, like, a head just popping up. Like, I knew something was going to pop up, I just didn't know what. And he gets through that, and he comes out, and there's, like, this, like, cage at the far end, and there's some light. And he's just like, like, it's kind of creepy. But he rolls up to it, and there's a body laying on the bed. And he has to find, like, the key thing to open it, because it doesn't just open. He manages to find the key, opens it, and he approaches, and it definitely looks like Mia. And he's like, oh, no. And, like, as he goes to reach her, she falls over. She kind of looks dead or, like, dazed a little bit. And he's all like, Mia, Mia. And, like, her eyes open and she's like, Ethan. And then she looks confused. Like, what are you doing here? And he's like, you sent for me. And she's like, no, I didn't. No, I didn't. We have to get out before Daddy comes. And, you know, and at that point, I'm like, who the fuck is Daddy? Who is it? And she's trying to navigate you out because there are other people. People, air quotes, on the grounds. And they don't like strangers, pretty much. And she's just like, I didn't send you an email. And, like, she's trying to rack in her brain what has happened. And granted, Mia has the answer. She just doesn't want to tell you what that is. because she did kind of lie to you about the job and all the like details of the job.
Yeah.
You know, and you think this would be the time where you'd be like, hey, wait, hey, husband.
Kind of lied?
No, she absolutely lied.
Thank you.
100% lied about this babysitting job. It was a lot more than just watching a kid sleep on a couch for 8 hours. Like, this was some high-level profile babysitting shit right here. And shit went bad. Real bad. Daddy does, in fact, find you. And Daddy is not happy that you're here, like, at all. And kicks the fucking shit out of you. Like, all the shit. That happens a little bit. But you manage to get away, and you're with Mia a little bit, and then Mia starts acting kind of weird, like very weird. And then all of a sudden, she's like fucking
very
possessed.
Very weird.
She, like, her eyes get all dark, and like all of a sudden, she's like super strong, like unnaturally strong. And like she's still saying like kind things to you, but it's all like demonic and like not her. And like, she kind of cuts your arm off, kind of cuts your hand off a bit, a little,
okay,
a lot,
kinda.
A lot.
Actually,
lops her hand off. She lops. I mean, you knock her out, like.
Her face
like,
changes. Point, like, that's the thing that's so weird. Like,
yeah, it
drops. Be normal, and then, like, her face changes, and it gets all dark, and all the color disappears from her face.
She gets all ashy, like, ashen colored. Her eyes sink in a little bit, and then her voice drops, like, 4 octaves.
Yeah.
But, like, it happens. And, like, the first time you, like, she kind of pulls herself out of it, and then she's slamming her head against a wall to, like, knock herself out. Because she knows what's up, but you don't know what's up. And she hasn't told you, and she's not going to for a long time. But you manage to get away from her. But, like, eventually she finds you, but it's still, like, her but not her. Because then she flips the script on you super, super quickly and, like, stabs your hand with, like, a knife. And then she stabs that same hand with, like, a screwdriver. And then she takes a chainsaw and cuts your hand off. And, like, it's pretty bad. Like, it's pretty, pretty bad. But it's at that point when you've been that fucked up that Daddy shows up. And in, like, a flash of, like, consciousness as you're kind of losing blood over the fact that, you know, you kind of lost your hand, you kind of see your body being positioned in a chair and you see your hand being stapled back to your stump a little bit. And you kind of black out more from that. But when you come to, you are at the baker's table. And you are sitting across from Daddy, who is Jeff Baker, across from his wife, Marguerite, their son, Lucas, and a strangely quiet, I thought was dead initially, but is actually still alive, old woman who you don't know who she is. And they're sitting at this table with food on it.
Food on it.
And Marguerite's like, now you need to eat because I slaved all over this and like very Southern hospitality. But I mean, like, this is like rotting flesh and like person meat, maybe some horse meat too, but definitely like probably was people, I think.
Yeah, definitely was people.
Definitely was people, Soylent Green. But you, Ethan, refused to eat it. And then she freaks out and like Jeff's like, leave. And she leaves. This cop shows up to the house. So, like, Lucas runs, like, off somewhere. And Jeff's like, I gotta go handle this. And, like, he disappears. And this is where you start navigating the game again. And you're just transversing this house. I don't know at this point if your first impression is just to get out and not get Mia. Or if you want to get Mia or not. But Ethan is just like, I need to get out of this chair. I need to get away from this family. And that's kind of where the survivalist, escapist part of this game is. But this is where they start putting in the proper elements of a Resident Evil game. Because so far, everything that's happened to you in this game, one, is meant to happen to you. So you can't avoid getting your hand cut off. Like, it has to happen. And you have to be attacked by Mia, I think it's like 2 or 3 times. Like, these are not things you can avoid. And they're not things you can actually properly defend against. So they really want to instill that, like, you are not... This is not a safe zone. They are not going to play fair. And this is truly like you have to do whatever you have to do to survive. You know, and sometimes you can't. I think it's kind of the point here that they wanted to address in this tutorial-ish thing. Because they haven't taught you how to defend. They haven't really taught you how to crouch. You have no type of weapon, so you don't know what you can do to defend yourself. So, like, they really kind of played the script on what kind of horror game we were going to get in this. As you're transversing through this house, because you're trying to avoid being found by Jeff or Marguerite Or, I mean, Lucas comes in a little bit later. So he's got other... Jack, sorry. Like, Jack definitely wants you dead. Like, you fight Jack, immortal Jack. A lot. And through fighting him, because he's trying to show you something, which at first you just think he's fucking crazy. But, like, there are a couple of these battles that you literally blow him up, run him over.
Light him on fire.
Cut, like, his top part of his torso off.
Yep.
And one time he even takes your hand with a gun, shoves it in his own mouth, and pulls the trigger.
Yep.
And yet he keeps coming back.
Yeah, that one was the fucked up one. He's like, you're about to see something amazing.
See something really awesome. And then boom, blows his head off. So you find
but
out.
But his mouth keeps moving.
His mouth does keep moving. So the thing that has gone on, or from this, you can kind of establish that these people are not sane anymore,
nope,
clearly.
Nope, obviously.
And there is some type of mutation infection that gives them amazing regenerative power. And it also makes them incredibly strong. Because, like, even when Mia's possessed, like, she chucks you across a fucking room. And she doesn't look like, she looks like she's a buck 20 at best.
At best.
Maybe. At best. Maybe wet. Like, she's tiny. And she, and Ethan is not a, like, you don't really see him, but you can definitely tell by his shadow. Like, he's clearly a tall dude. But, like, still, like, she should not be able to command, you know, this type of strength in that form. And she's not, like, buff or anything. She's, like, a regular pretty girl. But anyway, so you find out through elaborate Resident Evil puzzles, because they're all back, guys, in true fashion. You want to hoard all your, you want to be strategic about your gun and your ammunition and what you keep with you. And you have limited storage space. Like, it's truly back to Resident Evil basics in terms of UI and mechanic. You find out that Mia... this babysitting trip was, she was babysitting. She was transporting a person who I think is this Evie person. I don't know how far in your playthroughs that you've been, if you've been to that or not.
Yep.
So Mia was transporting this girl, Evelyn or Evie, to a location in Louisiana. Why? You don't know. But you find out that Evie was a part of a bioweapon experiment. And she was being groomed as a bioweapon. And they pumped her with a lot of bad stuff and managed to get her to be able to, she's able to possess people. And she's able to, through that, infect them, which gives them this restorative power and this this regenerative and this strength ability. But it also makes them fucking crazy.
Yeah.
And something happens, which at this point, I don't know the exact details, but she doesn't get to her ideal location. And Evie and Mia show up at the Baker farm. And because Evie's been a bioweapon, and she's a little girl, like she is a little girl, and she doesn't have a big, strong sense of family, but like she's always just wanted, you know, to be a kid and to have a family. And, you know, what other girl who has the abilities to possess people and make them do what they want, then take over a family, which is exactly what she does.
I mean, if you want a family, you make a family. And
she made a family. She did. Now, the only way to get her infection is you have to accept her gift, which is some of her genetics, which they have put in food and in some cases other people to then be used as food. So if you travel back to when Marguerite was trying to feed you, they were trying to infect you with Evie's gift that would give you that regenerative power and all that stuff, but also would allow Evie to possess you. So it's kind of good that you're a picky eater because you'd be fucked otherwise. Evie, and this is just speculation because I haven't gotten to the point where they've confirmed this yet. I'm under the suspicion that Evie possessed Mia and had Mia send that email to get Ethan to the house to infect Ethan so that Ethan and Mia could be her new mommy and daddy.
Yep.
So that she could get rid of Marguerite and Jack.
Yep.
Jack and Marguerite don't like this because, you know, they opened their homes to her. Like when they first showed up, like they were very welcoming. They let Mia and this girl stay. And like they were just generally nice, quiet people who were just living in their bayou, minding their own business. And, like, here this girl is casting them off. So Jack just wants to kill you so that, you know, she can't infect you and he can stay daddy because they're kind of fucking insane. And kind of the same with Marguerite. I don't think I've seen in anything yet Evie infecting Lucas at all, but Lucas is fucked up. So, I mean, he might just not have to be possessed and just kind of follows her natural pattern anyway. I don't know. She has infected Mia, but I don't think to the same extent that the others have been infected. Like, I don't know if it's been fairly recent for her or not yet, because she doesn't often... Mia doesn't seem as crazy as the Bakers.
So here are my thoughts on all of that, okay? Because if you've done a bunch of exploration, for instance, the first part where you find Mia and you get her out of her cage, okay, if you explore the whole area, there's a note in a drawer. And in the drawer is a list of names, a bunch of names. And some say turn.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And some say dead.
Well, there's a... Before that, there's a newspaper where it's like a local newspaper where it's like 20 missing within 2 years. Right. So you know people are dead.
Right.
People got taken
and Liam Neeson was not able to help them.
His skills were not strong enough.
You see this list and it has a bunch of names on it, and some say dead and some say turned.
Turned.
And some people that I've watched play in the game turn the note over. Some people don't. The people who do, when you turn it over, you see Mia's name at the top of the list, and there's nothing next to her name. And there are a couple other names that are on the list that also have nothing next to them. So obviously somebody is keeping track of something.
Yeah.
And what I realized is those are people who were given the gift. Some people turn, some people die. So not everybody is able to process the gift they were given in the same way. Okay, and so some people are able to process the gift, and you realize what the gift is when you are exploring the upper levels of the old house. You come
Because it's not just one house. It's like several houses all tied into elaborate puzzles.
Yeah, but there's a upper level that you reach when you are looking for the... serum.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you get into the upper room where there's a piano and there's like another dress mannequin that has a ball cap on it. And there's this like voodoo doll looking thing.
Yep.
And there's a letter in that room that when you first read through it, you're not sure who wrote it. If you read through it a second time, really paying attention to the words, you realize that it's Marguerite. And she's talking about the day when Evie and Mia showed up and they welcomed them in. When you get to the third part of the note, because it's actually a four part note, and again, some people that I've watched played through read all parts of the note. Some people blow through it. If you don't blow through it, you know there's a tone that seems very, like you said, southern, warm and welcoming. You know, girls showed up today. We brought them in. We fed them. I hope they're able to
get to where they're intending to go.
Yeah, and all that kind of stuff. And then you get to the third note, and the third note is, she brought me a gift today. It's an arm. And then you get to the last note, and the last note, the tone is completely different, and it's like, I will protect her against anybody and anything, and anyone that comes in and tries to take her this gift away from us, I will kill them. So you can see that after the gift is received, there's a switch. Someone is turned. Marguerite is turned. And you're actually trying to get to Marguerite because...
you need her lantern to get to the thing that lets you make the serum.
Right. And so all the pieces are really delivered very well. You know, it is a very much
very...
a scavenger hunt that has a lot of thriller moments in it. You know, even the jump scares are not... too pronounced, except for the one where Marguerite catches you on the stairs. That one fucked me up.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. When she's all spidery.
Yes. Because she's spidery.
Yes. And, I mean, I think Jack just has the best regenerative things. Because, like, he can literally be blown the fuck up and melt and then regenerate.
Jack,
so like
Eve.
I don't think he turns into anything, or at least it hasn't happened yet.
But so there are these doors that you have to get into, and you require these certain keys that are all made up of different animals, and they're basically different people that are in this Baker family. Marguerite is the spider. I believe.
Jack but her keys are Raven key. Like hers are the Raven keys.
I know her key is the Raven key because there's not a spider door. Her key are the Raven keys, but you know there's the spider element that you have to like get the thing to open that door.
Yeah,
and that's a spider, and that's the one that leads you to Marguerite, and she. I don't know how far along you are, but when you fight her, she's spidery.
She's very spidery. She has, like, her, like, punani area is like a wasp nest because it's bugs. It's bugs and insects. It's not just particularly spiders.
Just like she can manipulate all of those. Like a spider's, you know, stomach.
Like a nest, yeah.
And so and like, she's very spidery. I would say that Jack is very scorpion-y. You know, he just keeps attacking, and you almost can't find a place where he is vulnerable.
Maybe, yeah, that makes sense.
And then
I mean, you do get the scorpion key after you fight him the second time,
and
I think.
Lucas is the snake.
The snake. So there's something about Lucas.
Yes, like, there is something about Lucas.
Well, because, like, the other two, like, I definitely think Jack is turned, and I definitely, like you said, Margarita's turned.
Yep.
And, I mean, I know that, like, Lucas is fucked in the head, but I don't think I don't think she can manipulate him, and I don't know why yet. Because, I mean, I just think he's just been in this family too long, and he's just all kinds of fucked up. So, like, I don't think she can yet. So,
Can I tell you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
She can't.
See, I thought some, because it seems like she could have sent him at any time to fuck up shit with Ethan, but he's been off doing his own thing. Like,
he's the only one that can't be turned. He can't be turned.
And it's not because he has a serum, because you're getting the components for the serum, and I don't think they have the serum bits all over the place to make that. So that means he already got whatever he needed before.
There's a reason why. But
he's a fucking plant. He's got to be a plant. They gave him something so that he would be able to be there, witness stuff, keep eye on stuff.
Yep.
But has to play the game. It's fucking the Umbrella Corp, I bet. I bet it's Umbrella. Because obviously, with all these series of infections in BioWare, because, you know, you had, like, the T-virus, and you have the alphabet soup of viruses. And, I mean, clearly, Evie is a bioweapon, and I imagine E series, that makes sense, blah, blah, blah. So, okay, so he's not. So good. I'm glad I was able to appease that, because I'm like, something's up.
Yeah.
Because she will turn, like, she'll possess anyone who's near Ethan to fuck with him, and Lucas has been around a couple of times, and you don't ever see him get all darkened and fucked up. So, I mean, he's just fucked up naturally. But anyway.
Correct.
So, I mean, and there's still one other character that we haven't really brought up yet, and that's Zoe. So, so in the beta, when you're going through the house, at the very end, when you get upstairs and there's the phone and you get the whole, you have been chosen, kind of blah, blah, blah. People thought they were making fun of PT with it. And everyone thought it was Ada Wong on the phone talking to whoever you were. It's not Ada Wong at all. It's Zoe. Zoe Baker.
Wong.
Because, what?
You were Wong. You get it? It's not Ada Wong. I said you were Wong for thinking Ada Wong.
Yeah.
I was making a pun.
Because it's not.
But you didn't catch the pun.
I didn't catch that. But everyone thought it was Ada Wong.
Zoe.
But it's Zoe.
I'm just going to go back in the corner over here.
Okay. So, and Zoe has been helping you via phone, like via rotary phone, because I'd like to know how she knows where you are. To be able to ring the right phone. Like, I don't get it, but that's fine. Like, I didn't make the game, so that's fine. She is a baker, and she has also been infected. And she is not at the same level of infection or tertness as the others are in her mind. So she has, like, a picture, because when you finally get to her trailer, you see a picture of all the bakers, and on the back she's written, there's no hope for them. And it's all four of them in the picture. But I don't know. I believe with that, then most likely she doesn't realize that Lucas is not turned yet.
Right.
I think. So she thinks that they're all just far gone. So she is like, Ethan, I think you could do this. There are these things that we need. We can make this serum because we cannot leave the prop. We can't leave the grounds with this infection in us. And not only do I have it, but Mia has it. So, like, great way to rope him in, Zoe, Fector. So you are going on the scavenger hunt to get these things to make this serum.
the sign is about at the horse thing. Like, that's pretty much the barrier. You can't go past that point if you have the gift.
Yeah. So, good to know, because I did not know that. So I mean, and the part of the walkthroughs that I'm watching the Rad Brad, because he's just got a great cadence of voice. We have just gotten the arm. So the part that I'm watching, like, he just got the arm, and Lucas is like, hey, by the way, I got the bitches. Come find me. Also, have fun with this. I want you to have fun with a little thing I have set up for you. And we've just watched the Happy Birthday tape, which was fucked up. Like, I love that they're using these VHSs as a...
Seen the Happy Birthday tape.
Yes, yes, did see the Happy Birthday tape.
I have not seen it.
Oh, my God.
Because where Mark is at, he got there, but his inventory was full.
So he couldn't pick it up.
So he couldn't pick up the tape. Jack hasn't gotten there yet, and neither have the Grumps. So I haven't seen the Happy Birthday tape.
All right, well, I will not spoil
it. But I know that Lucas is fucked up from all the notes that we read in Lucas's room. And that Lucas has been fucked up for quite some time.
For a while. I will not spoil that for you then, but that is fucked up. Like, if you've ever watched a Saw movie, then you'll enjoy this homage.
I haven't. Oh, God damn it.
Yeah. It's not as gruesome, though. Okay. But, like, the whole idea of here's this game.
Because I don't like the look of it.
Well, I mean, you know what? Never mind. I'm gonna talk about it.
Oh, damn it.
So, yeah, I'm going to do it. So in the tape, because once you find it, you obviously want to find a TV so that you can watch it. And you see our buddy Lucas, and he's dragging somebody. Who's he dragging? He's dragging Clancy. And he's like, Clancy, he's like, I've been waiting to make something worthy of this family, like, forever. And I finally, after 2 months, did it. And I need you to test run it for me, bro. He's like, this could be really great. It's all about you. You're going to love it. And you know, you as a player, you are not going to love it,
right?
Like, at all. And, like, he throws you into this cage, and he shuts the door, and he can talk to you through, like, a PA. And he's like, I don't have a really great title for this, but this is called the Get Out of the Room Alive Without Painfully Dying or Dismembering. It's like I said, it's a working title. I'm sorry. I'll work on that better. And, like, literally, there's this mannequin, and it's, like, kind of decrepit looking. And, like, there's a notebook in front of it, and it has, like, a hole in its stomach for where you could put, like, you could press a button or wind something. He's got a hand, and the hand is missing a finger. And so, like, you have, and by his hand where there's the missing finger, there's this candle, and the candle is lit. The mannequin kind of looks like a clown, and it can't really do much of anything, but you grab the candle so you can kind of look around, but it's, like, kind of dark, and it kind of looks like a house, like an apartment. And you go in through the kitchen, and you see, like, a stove, and you see, like, a refrigerator. And then you see this weird painting of, like, a guy in, like, a black trench coat there painted on the wall. So you kind of freak out at that. And then you look down this hallway and you see this birthday cake. So and literally there's a sign that says, you know, happy fucking birthday. Do you got a light? And the whole point is for you to get this candle with it lit into the cake. And that should be the end of the trial. You should be fine. But as you're walking through the hallway, the sprinklers turn on and your candle goes out. So you have to go through the rest of the little bits of the house to find this balloon that you find. And the black figure thing actually has, like, a pipe pushing air out. So you're like, oh, I'll just blow up the balloon. Well, you blow up the balloon. And the balloon is, like, weirdly spiky as it's, like, filling up, which is weird. And when it explodes, it has, like, needles in it. So you get stabbed with all these needles and stuff. And also within that, you kind of get gouged in the stomach with a much bigger thing that kind of looks like an arrow, and it's a writing quill that should go on the hand to the dummy, but you still don't have the finger yet. And there's a couple of, like, you have to put your hand in a dirty toilet at one point to get a telescope to help you get, like, these, so you could see these, like, hidden, like, stamps on the wall or whatever to decode some stuff. But by the end of it, you find this straw dummy, and you have to set it on fire, and he has the finger in him, like, and it's the exact dummy finger that we found in the beginning hour. So now you're like, holy shit, if you played it, like, here's where the finger comes into play. So you're like, oh, if I put the finger in the dummy, because you are at this point, hopefully you've given him the pen, he, the dummy, is supposed to write out the password you need for the last door. That lets you get to this this crank, like a circle crank thing that you need to turn off the sprinkler to put the candle in the cake.
Yeah.
You go through all that, you get it, you get the pen, and you put that in, and like the I forgot a detail. So the first thing you actually do is you need to find the winding key to make the dummy move. And that's in the room with the cake. And it's like corking this barrel, like this keg. And you pull it out. Stuff is coming out of the barrel, but you don't really exactly know what it is yet. Like, it looks really dark, but you don't know what it is. So you kind of leave it. Fast forwarding through all this, you get the crank. You go into that room. You turn off the sprinkler system. You go into the kitchen. You light your candle, you walk into the room, and, like, Happy Birthday is, like, playing, like, very scarily, like, very run down, like, on a really old cassette tape type of thing. It's all distorted. And you go and you put that candle in there, and, like, you kind of feel for Clancy, like, you absolutely do. And he puts it in, and, like, Lucas is like, well, you did it. Good for you. And then the room blows up. And that serum that was coming out of the keg was gasoline.
Of course.
So you burn to death because you've shut off the sprinkler system. And like the door like solidifies and you burn to a crisp. And at the very, very end of it, like Lucas comes back. And like, because you still have your camera on. Like, because you're the camera guy. So like it's, you have it on you. It's like a GoPro, I think. And, like, Lucas comes in and he looks at your body and he's all like, happy fucking birthday. And it cuts out. And, like, so, I mean, these tapes that we find, I think, are great ways to, because, you know, you get to play the scenario. And, I mean, in most people's cases, you see how people have failed. So it gives you the opportunity to not fail. Because, I mean, I don't know if you can at that point or not. But, like, in my game, like, we've just seen that tape. So I'm like, I wonder if when we get into Lucas's area, if he's actually going to put us through Happy Birthday or not. And, like, we know how to possibly avoid, you know, right. Those things.
Because I think that's what's going to happen. But I would imagine. Because every tape that we see is a...
It's something that you then have to go through as Ethan.
Right.
That's my theory. At this point now... I don't think Jack is dead yet because he has crazy regenerative power. I think Marguerite, though, is absolutely, like, completely dead because I don't think her restorative is the same type, I don't think. Like, I think the mutation does
well, here's
similar, but not.
Here's the thing. Here's the clue to whether or not somebody's really dead or not because you've seen the Marguerite fight, right?
Yeah. Okay. Like, she completely disintegrates.
Right. And that's the key. There's the difference between their body just being there in its form of being quote-unquote dead, and then there's the moment when everything goes to stone, ash, and then crumbles. When things go to stone, ash, and crumble, they are actually dead.
Okay.
Because the infection is dead.
Eradicated in that vessel.
In that instance.
So then... Knowing that Jack's not dead yet. Fuck, man. Like, this guy has taken out so many people and has gone out so many different ways in this game. Like, it's all awe-inspiring.
The thing, just to wrap this up, because we're running out of time here, but, like, the thing that I'm enjoying most about the game is that it really is so much more about the suspense and the puzzle-solving and the sense of urgency that is created to solve a puzzle. That really make it feel survival horror, like, because you can fuck up and die.
Yep. Oh, man, there are so many times that you can, there's a lot of one-shot kill potential from baddies.
Yep.
Like, they don't warn you about them. They just happen, and you have to learn.
I've seen some of my friends playing the game and streaming and getting caught by Mia when she has the chainsaw. And that's a no-bueno.
Yep.
You don't want to do that.
Yeah, that's no. That's no. You don't want that. You don't want to catch that.
That's not how.
I mean, granted, like I said, like the hand slice, that is scripted. That happens to everybody.
Yes.
But like, when she takes it to the rest of you, that's not.
Yes. That's not. You want to try to avoid that.
I'm looking forward to seeing, because, I mean, so far, Zoe has been nothing but helpful. But, I mean, I think there's going to be a time where something's going to come up. Because, I mean, you're making the serum. I don't know how much serum you'll have. There only might be enough serum for you to, like, one or the other. She's been helping you this whole time. It's going to be like, do I help Zoe or do I help, you know, my wife who I came for?
I mean, that is the bitch that brought you here. The reason why you lost your hand and got another hand. Do we even know whose hand that is?
His hand because you have it. Yeah. Because he picks it after, you know, she gets taken out or knocked out because she's not dead. He picks it up. Like, I'm surprised that he's not like, but he's just like, picks up his hand like, it's no sweat off my back. High five, bro.
What the hell does Ethan do for work?
I'd like to know, because he seems pretty chill about everything that's happened to him.
He doesn't get nearly as upset about things. Like, I think he cursed more when he had a roach crawling on his hand.
He's like, I fucking hate this shit. Yeah, when the spiders. Then when his hand gets chopped off. Yeah, exactly.
And he's bleeding profusely from his hand. Okay? He cursed more with the cockroach crawling on his hand when he opens up the pot lid than when he has to, like, jam his hand down the throat
neck of a dude
that's been decapitated.
He's been decapitated at that point, but, I mean, this was the cop who literally, like, got his eye and part of his skull, like, shoveled by Mr. Jack.
Right.
So, I mean, like, he wasn't decapitated then. He was sure enough dead. And then I think Lucas went further and, like, took off the rest of his head to put in the fridge.
Lucas just ain't right. That's the name of this game. It's Resident Evil.
Lucas
7.
Is bad.
Lucas just ain't right. That's the game.
But it's very good. I definitely think, because I know the last time we talked about this, everyone was like, it kind of feels like a Silent Hill game. And there are a lot of nuances. It does really feel like a Silent Hill game. Like, in terms of the psychological stuff and, like, that element of the story is very Silent Hill-esque. Like, absolutely, I get that. Once you start getting into the actual game where you can, you know, scavenge for ammo and you're solving the puzzles, like, and even, like, some of the weird, like, dark humor, because there's some jokes, believe it or not, and all the terror that is happening, there are some jokes in there. Like, I think after the biggest the chainsaw battle with Jack, he's like, will you just stay fucking dead, please? Like, some of it's really good. But overall, like, it definitely still feels very Resident Evil to me. Like, in the good way. Like, 2 and 3 good way. Like, even a little bit 4, because we are kind of dealing with outside viruses from, like, the T and all the other viruses from 1 through 3. I like that they're reinventing, or they're expanding on their lore a little bit more. And we're seeing that, you know, these zombie incidences, one, are manifesting, they're mutating, and they're not just happening, like, in cities. It is spreading. Its evil is, like, you know, it's so poignant, for lack of a better word. It's so good. And I think the high praise from reviewers, I think, is definitely warranted. I mean, I haven't seen anything really nitpicky. I'd say the only nitpicky thing that I can say is, like, a couple of times some of the shadows, like, on some of the backdrops have been kind of wonky, but, like, that's still not, like, that's not even anything to pick my nose at. Like, whatever, the shadow's fucked up. This whole world's fucked up.
The team really did a fantastic job on
this
game.
Great job.
And I would definitely say that it, for me, and again, this is somebody who didn't play through 6, it does wash the nasty taste out of my mouth because I did watch people play through 6, and it really does. And I hope that Capcom builds on this.
If this could have happened right after 5?
Yeah.
Ooh, actually, I mean, if we're going to be honest, no, if this had actually been 5, and as much as I apologize for 5 and I enjoy 5, we didn't need 5 to advance the story. Because, I mean, the viruses that we got exposed to in 4 was the D virus, and this is the E.
Yeah.
So, like, this should have been Resident Evil 5, not 7. Resident Evil 5 should have been, like, very much like Revelations. It should have been a one-off, like, in the overall arching story, like something happening at the same time as... Yeah, Revelations. But it should have been a one-off that wasn't titular canon. It should not have been a part of the titular canon. And 6 could go die in a fire. And, like, never... That should have been
boring. Well, just introduce it to Lucas, and it'll be all taken care of. All right, so anyway... That's as far as we've gotten in the story. I know that Panda will be picking up the game and playing it at some point.
Yep. So
I'm sure at that point we will talk about the end of the game because it'll be your experience getting to the end of the game. I'm going to continue watching people play the game. I'm not going to talk about the ending of the game or that experience until Panda has it. But I would say if you enjoy survival horror, and frankly, if you were a fan of the Silent Hill games, then you really need to play Resident Evil 7. It's that good.
It's very good.
And this is coming from somebody who doesn't play survival horror games. So that's how,
like,
you know,
I think this is
good.
A great fusion of survival horror. Like, this is how survival horror as a general should have been. It should never have been segregated into, like, escapist horror. Like, they should never have done that. It should have all just been base-level survival horror. You're trying to survive. Whether that means you're trying to escape a bad situation or you're going to arm yourself and, like, take it out. But it has it also has kind of an homage to Outlook, Outcast.
Outlast.
Outlast.
I was about to be like, there's no hey-ya in this. What are you
hey
talking
ya.
About?
No, Outlast. With that air of escapism, because you, inevitably you're trying to get the fuck out. Like, and these things are definitely more powerful than you. So, like, choose your battles wisely. Choose your engagements wisely.
Yeah.
And, like, so, well done, Capcom. Well done. Took you two bad games to get here, but okay. It's okay. We all make mistakes. Yep. High five.
High five. Speaking of high fives, if you enjoyed this episode of our weekly podcast, then make sure that you subscribe and give us a like or a review on whatever platform you're getting our podcast on. And that can be on iTunes, either through the desktop app or on your iOS device through the podcast application by subscribing to the Eshcast. That can be on Stitcher Radio. That can be on Google Play. That can be on Vogue Network. Pretty much any podcast aggregator out there, you can get our show. So make sure that you subscribe and get every episode the moment we make it available on the web for your listening pleasure. Hit us up on our social at ESH News on Twitter and Instagram, Facebook.com/Land of Esh. Comment on our posts. Let us know if you're enjoying the things that we're writing and the things that we're sharing on our social feeds. If there are things that you want us to check out or review, we'll give you a shout out if we follow up on your recommendation or question in the podcast. Definitely make sure that you add our website, bookmark it to your favorite things, or grab our feed and put it in your favorite feed reader if that's how you like to roll. And that website is electricsisterhood.com. If you enjoy the things that we write and review, then make sure that you check out all of the other great content creators that are part of the Land of Esh. And that includes B3 Crew, our homie KBD, and the No Borders, No Race podcast. That includes SmashRook.com and our homie Hamsterman2049 and his live streams every Wednesday night at 9 Eastern on Twitch, playing retro as well as current games for your visual enjoyment. It includes Phil the Issues Guy with Phil's Recap and Review, my favorite recap and review show on YouTube, and not just because he's part of the network, but because it's fucking enjoyable. So make sure that you check him out. And last and certainly not least, our homies over at NerdCrave.com, held down by the one and only Louis Hendricks. But if it's nerdy and you're craving it, then they're talking about it over at NerdCrave.com. Comics, manga, anime, video games, you name it, they're covering it. So make sure that you subscribe to all of our websites, that you check us out across social. We are all over the place. On YouTube and on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter, and some are on Snapchat, some got Tumblr. I mean, we're just everywhere. So if you enjoy the stuff that we enjoy, then make sure that you like us all, engage with us all, and let us know from time to time what it is that you enjoy about us, and remind us that it's cool to be us and be able to share this stuff with you. So as always, I'm Ninja Sista.
And I'm Pandalicious.
Until next time, guys.
Stay classy.
Bye.